This is Talk Is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works, Independent Community Radio. All right, this is the Mushroom Boycott presentation by Nancy Bray that talks about Cesar Chavez and the whole labor movement. And next week will be the Q&A. So this is very important. You want to don't buy windmill mushrooms or mushrooms from Sunnyside, Washington. So this is the flyer from that lecture on November 8th at World Pies. For 3 years, workers at a mushroom facility in Sunnyside, Washington, now owned by a windmill mushroom farm, have been fighting for union recognition. Under Washington state law, agricultural workers are excluded from the right to organize, and there is no legal mechanism to force companies to recognize labor unions regardless of the wishes of a majority of the workforce. Many pro-union workers at windmill mushrooms have faced adverse actions, including terminations and conditions that have pressured them to leave their jobs. After repeated demonstrations, petitions, and other demands for union recognition, in December 2024, the United Farm Workers announced its first official boycott of the decade against windmill mushrooms until the company agrees to recognize the union. Oregon's Farm Worker Union, PCUN, joined the UFW to announce the expansion of the boycott to Oregon. Don't buy windmill mushrooms or any mushrooms from Sunnyside, Washington. Windmill mushrooms are currently sold at Safeway, Albertsons, Market of Choice, and Fred Meyer. These mushrooms are sold in bulk, so please check the box label before buying. Actions for individuals and organizations. Contact Farm Worker Ministry Northwest for regional information and to endorse the boycott. That's fwm-nw.org. Contact Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers for local information at brayng@gmail.com. All right, so just I have a few minutes here. So, all right, I've been researching Venezuela, and so I'll have more for you on the second part of this episode, the Q&A from Nancy Bray's Boycott Windmill Mushrooms presentation. In researching this, the timelines always stop at Hugo Chavez. So, and I know it goes further than back than that because we had the WTO on just this issue about extractive industries not paying the people in the countries that they are extracting from. So this is a Wikipedia entry, and please research this yourself, and I'll have more for you next week, a little bit more in-depth research on this for you next week. As I've reported long ago that this is, as we all know, is a just a bid for oil, for Venezuelan oil. But, and you know, Congress is just powerless to do anything. So, and I would tell you to boycott something there, but I used to buy Citgo gas, was from Venezuela, but Trump stopped all imports of Venezuelan oil. So, this is playing after December 18th, but there should be major demonstrations about Venezuela and not going to war in Venezuela for oil. You know, one thing I will recommend is I just found this lecture, and I don't want to play it because I try to use local stuff that you can't get anywhere else. But if you go to YouTube, officially endorse this YouTube video called The Slow Death of the Petrodollar and What Comes Next by the Chill Financial Historian. And so that's The Slow Death of the Petrodollar. It's pretty accurate in what they're talking about of the petrodollar and why the BRICS nations and why everyone the petrodollar is basically the dollar of war, and you're seeing this is where your tax dollars go, liberal or conservative. Your tax dollars just go in the hands of defense contractors, and they scrape off what is literally blown up. Your tax dollars are literally blown up, and that's why you're seeing the inflation that you're seeing, is because the treasury, your tax dollars, are literally blown up. Instead of going for needed infrastructure and things that we actually would use and use again and again, it's just blown up, literally, with missiles and bombs. Betancourt became president in 1945 by means of a military coup d'etat, and during his time in office completed an impressive agenda. His accomplishments included the Declaration of Universal Suffrage, the institution of social reforms, and securing half the profits generated by foreign oil companies for Venezuela. In 1941, Venezuela received $85 million 279,158 bolivars from oil taxes out of a total value of 691,093,935 bolivars. Before Betancourt's changes in the taxing system, the state of Venezuela was making only a fraction of what oil companies were making in profit. President Betancourt had overthrown the Isaias Medina Angarita government, which enacted a law to tax oil companies up to 60% and reserve for the government the right to raise more taxes as needed. Betancourt changed the law to 50-50. One of Betancourt's original objectives was the nationalization of the country's oil industry. Mexico had nationalized its oil industry in 1938, and because its economy was more diversified than Venezuela's, there was little to no backlash. Venezuelan's economy was not stable enough to handle potential boycotts by foreign oil companies and would have left nation fiscally vulnerable. Rationalizing the complication of nationalization at the time, Betancourt's government raised taxes on oil production instead, accomplishing the same goal, Venezuela's oil riches to benefit Venezuelans. In the late 1940s, Venezuela was producing close to 500 million barrels annually, and as production climbed, the tax followed. Venezuela was the Allies' top oil supplier during the wars occurring in the European continent. Betancourt identified this potential to play an important historical role, using the knowledge to his nation's advantage, transforming Venezuela into a global power. Germany then lacked reliable access to oil, limiting troop movements. Some historians identify this vulnerability a deciding factor in Hitler's defeat. Venezuelan oil played a key role. According to Betancourt, a spike in taxes was just as effective as nationalizing the oil industry. Tax income was increased from then to such a degree that nationalization was unnecessary to obtain maximum economic benefits for the people of the country. Oil companies were forced to cede to the demands of labor unions and no longer entitled to make larger profits than the Venezuelan government. As a result, Betancourt's government generally had full support of the labor unions as the administration openly encouraged workers to organize. In 1946, 500 labor unions were created, another notable achievement of Betancourt's first administration, including the termination of the concession policy, the initial development of refineries within Venezuela, and tremendous improvement in worker conditions and pay. All right, so boycott windmill mushrooms or Sunnyside, any mushrooms from Sunnyside, and check out Nancy Bray at, she's very good at organizing, from Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers at BRAYNJ@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
I am Marcia Weisiger. I am the Julian Rocky Dixon Chair of U.S. Western History in the Department of History at the University of Oregon. I want to, first of all, thank Ruben Zoller, who is the co-organizer of this event and has done some amazing things to help organize the whole series for the year. I also want to thank Michelle Wright, who is our publicist. But Nancy, I think, brought out the crowd today. So first of all, I'm just going to say, like, whoa, we need to have more labor activist history, apparently, because we've been doing this now for 12 years, no, 10 years, I think, something like that. And this is the largest crowd we've ever had. So this is really amazing. Thank you all for coming out. I also want to thank World Pies for letting us use their facility, and they've been doing a great job with us over the last several years. So I was going to have this big introduction for Nancy, but she wants to give her own introduction for herself, so I'm going to allow her to do that. So first of all, she'll talk for a while, and then we will open up to Q&A with all of you, and I will run around the room with a microphone so that your questions can be heard. So at any rate, thank you very much, and let's give a warm welcome to Nancy Bray.
Well, thank you, everyone, for coming. And can you hear me okay? Uh-huh. Okay. I'm not really a microphone person, so here we go. So I wanted to say thank you to the U of O History Department for inviting me. And I want to give a special thank you to Jacob Schmidt. I don't know if he's here. He's in GTFF. He's the one who suggested me as a speaker to them. Is he here? Anyway. And I also want to give a quick thank you to my husband, Herb Everett, and my son, Jesse Everett, for helping me all along the way here. So I am not an academic expert. I just want to say that right off. So my talk is based on my personal experiences with farm work and the farm worker rights movement, what I've learned through the years, and issues facing farm workers today. So it's a pretty long story, and it covers a lot of years, so please save your questions until the end. Aha, that worked. Have any of you ever done farm work for pay? Okay. So I'm a fourth generation Eugenian. I live in the house my parents built and that I grew up in. And growing up in Eugene, when you were in junior high, what you did during the summer was you picked pole beans. And that was in order to earn money to buy your school clothes. And the farmers had these old school buses, and they had routes through Eugene. And what you'd do is you'd get on the bean bus at 7 in the morning, and you'd go out and pick pole beans all day for 2¾ cents a pound. And what I noticed was when I was out there was there weren't just kids out there picking beans so you could buy your school clothes. There were families out there. And this is how I first became aware of migrant farm workers. And this had a big impact on what I've done in my life. And I do have some items up here that we brought. And one is a bean bag, the bag that you use when you pick pole beans, if you want to take a look at that later. During the summers of my high school years, I visited migrant camps weekly with a migrant ministry, where we brought clothes and books, and I tutored kids in reading and organized games. During my first year at the U of O, I got to do two things here. We'll see if I can manage this. During my first year at the U of O, I participated in the Migrant Labor Project. And this program had an office in the EMU and sponsored a series of classes, seminars in migrant labor. We looked at conditions in migrant camps, regulations and inspections, visited a migrant camp, and went to a Farm Bureau meeting, which was not a public meeting. And we were asked to leave. Participating in this program led me to live in one of the camps outside Eugene that summer. I hoed, picked beans, and cut onions for seed. It was a long summer, but I sure learned a lot. So I wanted to find out how unionization was making a difference in farm workers' lives. So in the summer of 1971, I volunteered with United Farm Workers, and I was very fortunate to be placed in the membership office in the Delano Field office in California. It's called 40 Acres, and it's now a national monument. Everyone who worked for the UFW was paid room and board and $5 a week, and we worked 6 days a week. There were a lot of volunteers there that summer because the farm worker clinic at 40 Acres was under construction. So I met Cesar Chavez and many of the UFW vice presidents, including Larry Etliong, Pete Velasco, Julio Hernandez, and Philip Veracruz, who became a good friend. I also got... Are we right there? Yes. I also got to know the Manong, also known as the Filipino Brothers, who were the original grape strikers in 1965 because I ate all my meals in Filipino Hall. That fall, when the project I was working on ended, I picked table grapes on a UFW ranch in Delano. I was the only gringa working there, and it was the hardest physical work I've ever done. When I returned to Eugene in 1972, I joined Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers and became very active in the boycott. I was working as a teaching assistant at the elementary school that was later named for Cesar E. Chavez. In the summers of 1972 and 73, I worked for Valley Migrant League in their child care program for migrant children in Mount Angel, Oregon. The second summer, the program took place at the newly founded Colegio Cesar Chavez. In 1976, I got my teaching license, and I taught for 32 years in Springfield School District. In 1997, with a significant increase in the Latino population in Springfield, the district asked me to design and coordinate the English Language Development Program, or ELD program, as a teacher on special assignment. It's the largest program in Lane County, currently serving over 600 students. So as you can see from the census statistics here, that the Latino population in Lane County in 1980 was 5,581 people, or 2.03%. And between 2000 and 2010, it increased 79.9%. By 2020 in Lane County, the Latino population was at 37,780, or 9.86%. The estimate in 2025 in Lane County is 12%. In the city of Springfield in 2025, the Latino population is 14.8%, and in Springfield School District in 2025 is 23.1%. While I was working in that position, I also worked at Lane ESD in several roles. I was Lane County Migrant Education Program Summer School Coordinator for the first 8 years of that program, and as Migrant Education Program Director for 6 years, and as ELD Specialist for 12 years. In that capacity, I worked with 28 small school districts in Lane, Lynn, Douglas, and Curry counties, assisting them with the development of their ELD programs. After I retired from Springfield District, I worked in education studies at the University of Oregon for 4 years, and I was a member of the organizing committee for United Academics. Today I continue to be involved with farmworker and immigrant rights through Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers and United for Immigrant Justice. Organizing farmworkers has been going on for decades and has been very difficult due to the exclusion of farmworkers from the National Labor Relations Act that gives all other workers the right of collective bargaining. This photo shows the cannery and agricultural workers' industrial union strike in the cotton fields in Pixley, California, in 1933, when two strikers were killed. Pixley is in Kern County, which you will hear more about later. The farmworkers' rights movement really geared up in California in the late 1950s, and early 1960s. In California, the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, or AWOC, was formed in 1959. Its members were largely Filipino workers, led by Larry Itliong. They were known as the Manong, the first generation of Filipino immigrants to arrive en masse in the United States. Many of them did seasonal farm work. Their first strike in the grape vineyards was on May 3, 1965, in Coachella Valley, California. Because most of the Manong were over 50 years old and did not have families of their own due to anti-miscegenation laws that prohibited them from marrying, they were willing to risk what little they had to fight for higher wages. Their strike succeeded in giving them a 40-cent per hour raise. In 1962, Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, Gilbert Padilla, and others founded the National Farmworkers Association, or NFWA, based in Delano, California. They spent 3 years going door to door and speaking at house meetings to get farmworkers involved. NFWA members were mainly Chicano Latino. By 1965, NFWA had about 1,200 members. When the AWOC farmworkers followed the grape picking season north from Coachella to Delano in the fall of 1965, they were told by the growers that they would be paid $1.20 per hour, which was below the minimum wage. They demanded a raise in their hourly wages to $1.40 per hour. When the growers refused, on September 7th, over 800 AWOC members met at Filipino Hall and voted to walk off their jobs at 10 grape vineyards. On September 8th, Larry Itliong, an AWOC, asked Cesar Chavez and NFWA to join the strike. On September 8th, on September 16th, the NFWA members, voted overwhelmingly to join forces with AWOC and support their cause. By September 20th, several thousand workers had left the fields at more than 30 farms chanting, "Huelga, strike." El Teatro Campesino, a Latino farmworker theatrical company, was founded on the picket lines and used satire, humor, and improvisation to perform skits at rallies and union halls. To support the striking workers, AWOC and NFWA launched an international consumer boycott of non-UFW grapes in December 1965. Did anyone here boycott grapes? Yes. Haha. So cities across the U.S. formed boycott committees, including in Eugene, Salem, and Portland. Pesticide poisoning was one of the focal points of the boycott publicity, as the UFW showed how pesticides were affecting both the farm workers and consumers, and this contributed to the later banning of DDT. The International Longshoremen's and Warehousemen's Union at the San Francisco Bay Area docks supported the boycott by refusing to unload non-union grapes. The 25-day, 300-mile march from Delano to Sacramento in 1966 heightened the nation's awareness of the strike and boycott. In 1967, the NFWA merged with AWOC to form the United Farm Workers of America. Cesar Chavez became president, and Larry Itliong became first vice president. Other vice presidents included Dolores Huerta and Philip Vera Cruz. In 1968, newly elected President Richard Nixon worked to break the boycott by increasing Defense Department purchase of grapes to be sent to troops in Vietnam from 500,000 pounds to more than 2 million pounds. Cesar Chavez's 25-day fast with Senator Robert Kennedy there on the last day gained national and international attention. The strikes and boycott lasted 5 years and cost the grape growers millions of dollars, but finally led to contracts with the major grape growers in 1970. The strikes and boycott were so successful that by the mid-1970s, 85% of California grapes were picked by workers covered by UFW contracts. The contracts improved workers' wages and working conditions and provided better protection against pesticides. In 1970, the UFW initiated a campaign to increase the pay and benefits for workers harvesting iceberg head lettuce in California and Arizona. In an effort to keep the UFW out of their fields, the lettuce growers made secret deals with the Teamsters Union. In August, more than 7,000 lettuce workers in Salinas responded by launching the largest farm worker walkout in U.S. history. When a Salinas County judge granted permanent injunctions against picketing 30 lettuce growers, Cesar Chavez was jailed for breaking the injunction by organizing a national boycott of iceberg head lettuce and setting up offices in 64 cities across North America. Visits to Chavez by Coretta Scott King and Ethel Kennedy while he was in jail were covered by the national and international press. When a decision by the California Supreme Court released him after 20 days in jail, he called for strikes against six more lettuce growers. community activists in smaller cities organize support organizations. Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers was founded in May 1972 by local activists Marion Phelan and Mel King, so Eugene Springfield-based advocates could support the farmworker rights movement. Marion was Catholic and believed that supporting the farmworkers was an act of faith. She bought a mimeograph machine that printed all of our leaflets and also founded the Interfaith Committee to Aid Farmworkers. Mel King was from LA and one day visited the UFW boycott office there and started picketing that afternoon. After his experience with Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers, he went on to become a labor lawyer working for the National Labor Relations Board in Seattle. Our organization included churches, labor unions, local officials, and community organizations working together to bring attention to UFW organizing and boycott efforts. Farmworker advocate Jose Romero, students from the Chicano Student Union at Lane Community College, and students from Chicano Affairs Center, MECHA, and the Migrant Labor Project at the University of Oregon were a big part of the local movement, along with community organizations such as the YWCA, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and Oregon Council of the Poor. Did anyone here boycott Iceberg Head Lettuce? Yeah. In 1972, we had an early victory when Lane Community College Chicano Student Union's boycott of the cafeteria led to the administration's agreement to sell only UFW lettuce. We began pressuring the University of Oregon administration to do the same. In the community, we gathered pledge cards from supporters and endorsements of the boycott from local unions and organizations. We talked to store managers, asking them to sell only UFW lettuce and leafleted at stores that refused. We picketed Labor Secretary James Hodgson to protest Nixon's anti-farmworker policies when he spoke in Eugene, and the Lane County Labor Council strongly criticized any local union officials who crossed our picket line. I'm in that picture. You can't really see me, but there I am. We hosted a solidarity Thanksgiving dinner of beans, rice, and water that was attended by 85 people. One of the people we invited was Wayne Morris, who sent us a letter to say he wasn't able to join us but strongly supported the boycott. We gave talks and showed UFW films to lots of organizations and unions. In 1973, the UFW announced a secondary boycott of Safeway, one of the largest sellers of non-UFW lettuce. Did any of you boycott Safeway? Yeah. A secondary boycott is when you boycott a business that is selling the product you are boycotting. This isn't legal under the National Labor Relations Act, but because farmworkers are excluded, the UFW could use this tactic. The UFW also reinstated the grape boycott when California growers refused to renew contracts they had signed in 1970. Many of the grape growers signed contracts with the Teamsters Union instead. The Teamsters brought in about 100 guards or thugs to protect strikebreakers from the UFW picketers in the grape vineyards, but they were unable to break the strike. Then the Kern County, remember Kern County? Mm-hmm. The Kern County Sheriff brought in their police force to arrest UFW picketers who were protesting nonviolently. UFW striker Najee Daifala, who was Muslim, was killed by a Kern County Sheriff's Department deputy, and UFW striker Juan de la Cruz was shot by a strikebreaker. 7,000 mourners marched with Najee Daifala's casket to his funeral at 40 Acres. The violence against the picketers made national and international headlines. With the announcement of the Safeway boycott, Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers set up informational picket lines 3 days a week at 5 Safeway stores in Eugene, Springfield, with leaflets, signs, and human billboards, and sent reports to the UFW on the number of customers who were turned away. We organized large solidarity picket lines with the goal of getting a lot of supporters there. The Third World Student Coalition Conference, with guest speaker William Kunstler, brought over 100 people to the 18th and Oak Safeway for our solidarity picket line. At the U of O, we worked with a variety of organizations to pressure the EMU cafeteria to sell only UFW grapes and lettuce. Also in 1973 was the founding of Colegio Cesar Chavez in Mount Angel, Oregon. It was the first and only independent accredited Chicano Latino university in the U.S. that was developed by and for farm workers and named in honor of Cesar Chavez. Jose Romero, who was active in Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers, was one of the founders of the Colegio. Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers supported the college by hosting fundraising dinners. The Colegio closed in 1983 when they were unable to repay a $1 million loan from the Department of Housing and Urban Development that they had inherited when they purchased the college. An exhibit about Colegio Cesar Chavez is available from the Oregon Multicultural Archives at OSU, and a story about its history can be accessed on OPB Oregon Experience. In 1974, the UFW ended the Safeway boycott and began a boycott of Gallo Wines when that company refused to recognize the union. Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers continued its lettuce and grape boycott efforts and added the boycott of Gallo Wines by picketing grocery stores and the local Gallo distributor. We organized a food caravan to Delano to aid striking lettuce and grape workers. We continued to get endorsements for the boycotts from local unions and organizations. When LCC administration reneged on its agreement to sell only UFW lettuce and grapes in its cafeteria, the Chicano Student Union gathered petition signatures and persuaded the LCC board to endorse the boycott. To increase pressure on the U of O administration, Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers with student and community organizations formed the UFW Solidarity Committee. The group gathered 3,000 signatures on a petition to ban the sale of non-UFW lettuce and grapes in the EMU cafeteria. It also sponsored a referendum during student government elections in May, where 71% of those voting supported the ban. When UFW President Robert Clark rejected the petition and the referendum vote, Mecha called for a boycott of EMU food services and began selling sandwiches and coffee on the EMU terrace. The UFW Solidarity Committee, The UFW Solidarity Committee, Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers, and other organizations joined in and operated the a boycott restaurant 5 days a week for over a year. This involved ordering ingredients from a wholesaler, getting a temporary restaurant license, passing health department inspections, making sandwiches at 5 a.m. at Mama's Home Fried Truck Stop, staffing the food sales table, and breaking down the table each day. When winter weather set in, the restaurant was moved into a small room adjacent to the EMU fishbowl and became the Campesino Boycott Room. Moving into this space led to some charges of student conduct code violations, but the administration finally agreed to let the restaurant stay as long as every few days a different organization signed up to use the space. This required extensive collaboration among many organizations and individuals, both students and community members, with no cell phones or email for communication. Students and faculty supported the effort in large numbers, which caused the EMU cafeteria to lose significant revenue and helped us raise thousands of dollars for the UFW. Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers hosted UFW Vice President Philip Veracruz on several visits to Eugene, where he spoke to large rallies at the U of O and LCC. UFW Executive Board Member Eliseo Medina, who later became the International Executive Vice President and is currently Secretary Treasurer for SEIU, spoke at a large rally at Johnson Hall in February 1974. And on May 12, 1974, UFW President Cesar Chavez came to Eugene and spoke to an audience of 700 people at MacArthur Court. We charged $1 per ticket and raised $700 for the UFW. I was chosen to accompany him throughout the activities that day, and that was an honor I will always remember. It's a little hard to see the photo. That's Cesar Chavez at the podium. I'm there, Jose Romero's there, Mel King is there, and Herb is there. Yeah, we were there. In 1975, we continued picket lines at various grocery stores selling non-UFW grapes, lettuce, and Gallo wine, and the Campesino Boycott Room at the EMU, with many community and campus organizations participating. Five members of Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers participated in the March on Gallo in Modesto, California. At the end of my talk, we have a home movie from 1975 that will give you a flavor of what we were doing at that time. It shows a picket line at Safeway, a rally at the U of O, and the March on Gallo. The 110-mile March on Gallo from Modesto ended with 15,000 people rallying in Sacramento and led to the passage of the California Agricultural Labor Relations Act that gave farm workers the right to secret ballot union elections free from retaliation. It took 5 years of the grape strikes and boycott, and 5 years of the lettuce strikes and boycott, and the Safeway grape and Gallo wine boycotts to get this passed. The passage made it possible for the UFW to end the grape, lettuce, and wine boycotts in 1978. While Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers' involvement with the UFW boycotts ended, our work lives on in our exhibit, The Farmworker Rights Movement and Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers, 1972 to 76. We have a lot of materials, photos, flyers, posters, newspaper articles, letters, picket signs, flags, bumper stickers, buttons, etc., that were on display at Lane County History Museum from September 2023 to October 2024. The exhibit will be at Springfield History Museum from July to December 2026 and at the Oregon Historical Society Museum in Portland in 2028. It's also available for short-term displays upon request. Just let us know. Some of our materials are on display here, so please take a look later. We also have a guest book that we hope you will sign. If you have comments, a comment right here, or memories of the boycott that you would like to share. All of our materials will go to the U of O archives once our displays are done. The legacy of the UFW strikes and boycotts of the 1960s and 1970s in Oregon is huge. In 1964, the Migrant Ministry changed its name to Oregon Friends of Migrants, and the Oregon Council of Churches formed Valley Migrant League, a coalition of clergy, legislators, farm labor employers, and Latino residents. It provided adult education, vocational training, health services, and a summer school for migrant children. In 1968, the United Farm Workers of Oregon was formed, and in 1970, the Chicano United Farm Workers of Oregon. Neither were formal unions, but they worked to protest substandard conditions in farm worker housing, grower policies limiting access to labor camps, and inadequate field sanitation. In 1971, Oregon growers were concerned about the possible spread of UFW organizing from California to Oregon. This led to the introduction of Senate Bill 677 that would have established collective bargaining procedures to limit farmworker strikes and boycotts in Oregon. The UFW mounted campaigns to defeat the bill, and Cesar Chavez, his brother Richard Chavez, and Dolores Huerta led rallies at the state capitol in Salem. Republican Governor Tom McCall vetoed SB 677 as unconstitutional. In the late 1960s and early 1970s, there was an increase in Immigration and Naturalization Service, or INS, raids targeting farm workers in Oregon. Between June and October 1969, there were 242 farm workers detained, many of them in Hood River and Medford. By 1973, INS deportations in Oregon were averaging about 1,000 per year. A significant number of those detained were tree planters and farm workers. In 1977, the Willamette Valley Immigration Project was founded in Woodburn in response to this increase in INS raids. It was started by activists based at Colegio Cesar Chavez and progressive lawyers and legal workers in Portland, Eugene, and Salem. Two of those activists were Cipriano Ferrell and Ramon Ramirez. Both of them lived in Eugene in the early 1970s and then were students at Colegio Cesar Chavez. The Willamette Valley Immigration Project provided legal advice and representation to farm workers and tree planters. In 1985, the Willamette Valley Immigration Project became Pineros y Campesinos Unidos del Noroeste, or Northwest Tree Planters and Farm Workers United, PECUN. Cipriano Ferrell was its first president until he passed away in 1995. Ramon Ramirez was the second president until he retired in 2021. Current PECUN president is Reyna Lopez. PECUN is the largest Latinx organization in Oregon. Through the years, it has focused on collective bargaining, housing, health and safety, legislation, and comprehensive immigration reform to benefit farm workers across the state. Legislative wins this year include $15 million universal representation provides free immigration legal services to immigrant and refugee communities to protect them from wrongful deportation. $3.3 million home fund keeps communities housed regardless of immigration status by providing financial assistance and support services. $2 million farmworker disaster relief protects the health of essential agricultural workers. $750,000 Indigenous Justice Language removes roadblocks for Indigenous language speakers seeking key services. Previous wins include overtime pay. You heard about those, but now we're up to overtime pay. Thank you, Herb. For farm workers, which passed in 2022. Starting January 1st, 2025, employers are required to pay overtime after 48 hours in one work week. And in 2027, it will be after 40 hours in one work week. New rules for heat and air quality hazards announced by Oregon OSHA in May 2022. These protections were only passed after the death of PECUN member Sebastian Francisco Perez. Heat illness prevention measures are required of growers. What didn't pass in the last legislative session was HB 2548, which would have established an Agricultural Labor Standards Board to set farm worker rights and protections. This bill became a directive to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to conduct a study examining the labor standards and working experiences of farm workers in the state. Watch for news of this bill in 2026. To learn more about PECUN, go to their website, pecun.org. For more information about the history of PECUN and the farm worker movement in Oregon from 1942 to 2012, see The Story of PECUN and the Farm Worker Movement in Oregon by Dr. Lynn Steven. It is available on the website of the U of O Center for Latino, Latina, and Latin American Studies, or CLLAS, C-L-L-A-S. I'd like to thank Dr. Steven for this excellent report that provided some of the historical information I've just shared with you. So PECUN is speaking out against the detentions and deportations of farm workers and immigrants as a part of Oregon for All, a coalition they have been leading alongside other labor and grassroots immigrant-serving organizations since Trump's election. For more information, you can go to oregonforall.us. In April 2025, Innovation Law Lab filed a lawsuit, PECUN versus NOM, to reinstate the long-standing protections that have kept ICE out of sacred spaces, such as schools, hospitals, and places of worship. A supplemental complaint with additional plaintiffs, including the National Education Association, American Federation of Teachers, and several churches, was filed in September 2025. Then on October 20th, Innovation Law Lab of Portland filed a class action lawsuit on behalf of PECUN for alleged civil violations against immigrants who have been deprived access to a lawyer or are at risk of arrest. They then filed an amended lawsuit and a motion for a preliminary injunction that U.S. District Judge Ann Aiken will hear on December 12th. Last week, you missed that one. That's the mural at PECUN. Sheesh. Okay, last week, on December 1st, with a huge increase in detentions by ICE across the Willamette Valley in October and November, PECUN launched a campaign of monthly events across the state beginning December 18th. And building towards a general strike on May 1st, 2026. The purpose of a day without an immigrant is to build steady growing pressure on the Trump administration to protest the harm and insecurity being inflicted on communities. The campaign will begin this week with door-to-door canvassing in Woodburn and Salem, with actions in other cities to increase awareness and visibility. So watch for news of a local action in Eugene, Springfield on December 18th. On October 2nd, the Trump administration and Department of Labor announced cuts to the adverse effect wage rate. The new rule cuts the wages paid to H-2A foreign visa workers by a third, and these workers will now also have to pay for their housing. According to the Oregon Farm Bureau, the hourly wages for these workers will be as low as $13 to $15 per hour, below the minimum wage. This rule will also lower the wages of U.S. citizens and legal permanent residents who share job sites with H-2A workers, and will make it financially beneficial for growers to hire more foreign workers. In 2024, over 3,700 H-2A foreign visa holders worked in Oregon, and over 400,000 nationally. In 2025, records show that Trump employs 184 H-2A foreign visa workers on his own properties. According to the Trump administration estimates, the cut will transfer $2.46 billion in wages from workers to employers annually, one of the largest transfers from workers to employers in U.S. agricultural history. On November 21st, the UFW of America, the UFW Foundation, and 18 farm workers filed a lawsuit against Troop, the Trump administration, to reverse the cuts. In December 2024, the United Farm Workers announced the boycott of Windmill Farms mushrooms. Windmill Farms is in Sunnyside, Washington, and is owned by private equity firm Instar. In August 2022, the Washington State Attorney General filed a civil rights lawsuit on behalf of the workers when the company fired most of its female and local workers in order to show a worker shortage so they could hire H-2A foreign visa workers at lower pay and longer hours. In September 2022, the workers voted for unionization and are represented by the United Farm Workers Union. Because farm workers are excluded from the National Labor Relations Act, they can form a union, but the employers are not required to negotiate a contract, and there are no legal consequences if they retaliate against pro-union workers. The UFW has condemned Windmill Farms, Instar, for its treatment of pro-union workers. In 2023, the Department of Labor and Industries fined the company $4,000 after an inspection found that working conditions left farm workers susceptible to injuries that could hospitalize them or cause partial disabilities. Rallies protesting the treatment of the farm workers started taking place in Yakima and Seattle. In May 2023, the workers won the civil rights lawsuit, forcing the company to pay a $3.4 million settlement. In August 2023, the U.S. Department of Labor, Wage, and Hour Division assessed Windmill Farms $74,000 in penalties for failing to pay its workers the required wage rate and for not providing adequate housing with cooking facilities or three meals per day. Rallies supporting the workers continued to take place in Yakima, Seattle, Tacoma, and Spokane. Windmill Farms, Instar, continues to this day to refuse to negotiate a contract with the workers and to retaliate against them if they are pro-union. In August 2025, the UFW and Pekun joined forces to expand the boycott to Oregon and held a demonstration at a Portland downtown Safeway. Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers, Oregon AFL-CIO, and Eugene Springfield Solidarity Network Jobs with Justice are collaborating to create a windmill boycott committee here in Eugene, Springfield. At our information table, we have leaflets and a sign-up list for more information about how to support the boycott. An immediate way to help is to not buy this brand of mushrooms, which are sold in Safeway, Albertsons, Winco, Fred Meyer, and Market of Choice. The mushrooms are sold in bulk and include organic varieties. If the box isn't labeled, please ask the produce manager what brand they are before buying. Organically grown doesn't buy Windmill, so mushrooms sold in any of the natural food stores in Eugene are okay to buy. Other ways to help are to tell your friends and neighbors about the boycott and to sign an online petition to Instar. The QR code is on our leaflet. We are seeking endorsements for the boycott, so if you are a member of a union or organization that might be interested in endorsing, please let us know. The boycott will continue until Windmill Farms, Instar, sign a union contract with the workers. there are some bright spots in the legacy of the farm worker rights movement in Lane County. Since 1997, the migrant education program at Lane ESD has continued to provide services to migrant families and a summer school for their children. Since 2002, Springfield School District and Springfield Alliance for Equity and Respect, or SAFER, have hosted an annual Dolores Huerta Cesar Chavez celebration each April to honor these leaders and to recognize those in the community who exemplify their actions and values. In March 2004, after a two-month lobbying effort by youth and community members, Eugene School District 4J became the first in Oregon to name a school in honor of Cesar Chavez. The Cesar E. Chavez Elementary School is at 1510 West 14th Avenue. The library at the school is dedicated to Larry Itliong. So another announcement hot off the press today. On March 2nd, the U of O Multicultural Center and Eugene Friends of the Farmworkers will be hosting Farmworker Solidarity Day at the U of O, and PICUN President Reyna Lopez will be the keynote speaker. So please save the date and watch for more information. You are all invited. So in conclusion, progress has been made in improving the living and working conditions of farmworkers, but the struggle continues, especially with farmworkers now being targeted for detention and deportation. Please do everything you can to support farmworkers and immigrants in Oregon and across the country.
And just as a reminder, I'll be playing the Q&A next week featuring Colin, a member of the GTFF, and to show you just how connected this is with all labor movements and a lot of movements. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.